is Radio 314 on the Red Ice Radio Network.
Hi, everyone. This is Lana. Thanks for joining me today. The show is longer today, about 1 hour and 45 minutes. That's the beauty of not doing a live show. You can record as much as you want and when you want. But first, I want to thank everyone who bought something from my first clothing line on lanaslama.com. I really appreciate it, and it definitely helps. I'm starting production on my line of organic underwear next, which will be sewn in Pennsylvania, so that's exciting. My guest today is Rachel. It's a funny story how we came together. Basically, she was a part of a European women's group, and someone wrote me warning me about her because she is part Ashkenazi, as if automatically guilty because of it. She was not on my radar until then, so then I checked out her blog and other posts, and I really liked what she had to say. So I wrote her, and we hit it off. She's a smart young woman, and I'm happy to have her on the show. Rachel is a full-time student studying business and created her blog almost 2 years ago after adminning anti-Islam pages for a couple years. Her focus has been to catalog some of her ideas, at first for the purpose of posting in internet debates. Over time, the blog developed into a place for certain finished ideas to share with friends, many of which also run blogs and write. The intended audience was more for intellectuals that have long been red-pilled, and she is passionate about always questioning a lot deeper than the surface. We're going to discuss her European awakening and her take on Jewish influence and the Islamification of Europe. Later, we get into feminism and eugenics, so don't miss out on that part. Rachel, coming up. Rachel, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you're brand new to the show, so I think that we should start out. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about your background. I know you were raised in California, so tell us about it.
Yeah, I'm from the Bay Area, South Bay Area, California, and it's pretty much like a glimpse into the future, I think, of what multicultural society looks like. It's like a world market here. Yep. And I guess growing up in an area like this, I never thought of it as anything different. And that's kind of been a huge awakening for me as I get older and kind of understand the world more through like technology. And yeah, so grew up in California. Haven't really seen that much of the world outside California, but I at least understand quite a bit of the dynamics are heading this way.
So what was it like for you growing up in middle school there then? Were you already a minority, or has that happened as you've gotten older?
Oh, yes, definitely. I don't think my parents were kind of young, so I don't think that they were quite privy to the fact that everyone sends their white kids to public or private schools out here. Mm-hmm. So they sent me to a public school, huge school, and not that many white kids, and definitely not that many blonde kids. I was blonde until I was about 13, and they start middle school at 10 out here. So I was in a middle school. There was already gangs and stuff like that.
So did they try and pick on you?
Yes, I got picked on quite a bit, though at that time in my life, I didn't really make the connections of it being like racial. Mm-hmm. Even hearing things like white girl, white boy as insults were just normal.
Yeah, it was a rude awakening for me too when I moved to California when I was younger and I was in a band and we were at our rehearsal studio and there was this pack of Mexican girls and they were looking at me and they're like, white bitch. And then they started running after me to like fight. I was like, what the hell is that? I mean, that was like my awakening moving into California, you know, it's like, what is going on here?
Yeah. And that's what I think a lot of people from other places don't fully realize the extent of how things change when you become a minority and how different it is. Like, and also the mindset changes. So I hear a lot of people talking about how people will wake up more, the more multicultural everything gets. And I don't really think that's always the case. I think sometimes if you're raised around it, you actually become more like used to it and you don't really know what it's like outside of that.
Yeah, see, that's what I worry about. A lot of these kids growing up just being used to it and then they don't even know what it is to preserve white heritage because they don't even know what white heritage is.
You know? Exactly, yes. So they don't. It's just normal. When you're raised with it, it kind of becomes like a whirlpool, just downward spiraling. So yeah, I'm glad that I got onto the internet eventually and kind of figured things out. But when I was younger, definitely had a lot of things that I look back in hindsight and realized that they were clear kind of people acting the way that their race acts.
So do you guys actually have some gangs down there right now?
Oh, tons of them. I mean, all over the place. There's no-go zones. I mean, I don't even know how people come here from other places to visit and don't accidentally get like killed or raped or kidnapped. However, Jeez. If they do, then it probably doesn't really make the media, or at least anything big in the media. It's kind of normal out here anyway.
Now, from what I've heard too, that these gangs are not, they're not white. There's, you know, Chinese and Black and Mexican, and they're even warring each other down in the LA area, but it's, there's not white gangs that I've heard of. What do you know?
If there's anything at all, it's like some small little minuscule, like kind of reactiveness that gets hyper-focused on. And for like different movies and stuff like that. I remember there was one back in like the 90s. I forget what it's called, but no, in LA and the San Jose, like Bay Area, it's definitely minority groups. Especially, it's kind of funny that you say the Chinese. It's interesting here, even Asians have gangs. And like, I think the San Francisco mayor was legislating like more gun restrictions and then found out to be like running guns to the Chinese mob.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. That was like a big thing, I think, like a year or so ago.
Yeah, I didn't realize how many Asians were coming into California, too. I just met this nice lady the other day when I was waiting in a lobby somewhere, and she had left Orange County, and she told me that she was one of the last white people to leave, and she sold her house to some Asians because that whole neighborhood had been taken over by Chinese. And I'm just wondering why. Oh, China's doing great right now. What do they need to be in California for, you know?
Oh, yeah, everyone buys up our land and then just comes in. Out here in the Bay Area, it's the tech company. So it looks like a world market, pretty much. I mean, me and my sister joke around when we go places, like counting, how, like if we see a white person, we get all excited. Like, I mean, there's certain areas I know where white people are, like where I live. Yeah. And it's extremely expensive to live in an area that's like a little cul-de-sac. And even here, we had like a shooting a few weeks ago at nighttime, randomly. Someone that's not supposed to be out here, but it's just, no one got hurt or anything, but it's just a very common thing.
So, I mean, it's the audacity. And are they still pushing for diversity in the California school districts?
Oh, yeah, of course. It's like so normative. It's not even like it has to be pushed. It's just like part of daily life with everything. The way that everyone just understands stuff is just so weird. Even like a lot of, well, just mostly whites out here are totally liberal. You would think that they would be reactive, but it's very few and far in between when you find somebody that is. And I've been trying to red pill people myself, but it's kind of hard to get through to them unless they have like a military background. Yeah. That's been like the few people I've been able to get through to. And I think it's because they've traveled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. You have to get out. I know that's what bothers me. There's some people that are like, yeah, it's not so bad. And they're living in some little white enclave in America. And I've traveled a lot lately and seen a lot of the big cities, and there's not a lot of white people in those big cities. We're already becoming minorities, you know? So, I mean, I was in New York the other weekend and I was just alarmed at what I saw there. And it was very unfriendly. I know New York's always kind of had that, but there were so many different languages and it was hard to understand everyone. You know, every taxi I went into smelt like, you know, curry or mothballs or some foreign something, you know. It was very uncomfortable for me. I don't know how people can like that, but I heard that Manhattan is also having white flight right now.
Oh, yeah. It's actually stressful. I mean, even the people that aren't dangerous, they're still rude and entitled. And I mean, even going to a grocery store out here in the richer areas, which is more like, I mean, I have no problem with Asians and Indians if they're like nationalist RSS Indians or something in their own country. However, out here, they will like ram you with their carts and they don't necessarily have any concept of like courteous, like being courteous or any of that.
So. Yeah, I've been to India and I've been to China, and it's kind of there's so many people that they just kind of climb all over each other and they just don't really have that courteousness. And that's one thing that I'm noticing that's awful in America. I've always thought of it as one of the friendliest places and people are courteous and good customer service, but I'm seeing all that go out the window as multiculturalism comes in more, because these incoming people don't have the same values that we do. And then also you have these young liberal punks growing up that are just really rude and condescending and arrogant. So almost have this, you know, I'm not going to serve you. I even noticed like going to the health grocery store here, there you pay a lot of money for it and they have someone that's supposed to bag your groceries, but you can help if you want. And they just kind of sit there and don't want to do it. Like, you know, I'm above this job. You do this job. You know, it's just really changing. I really don't like it.
Yeah, well, I think that the more people are urbanized in general, the more that it's almost like a mental illness. Like people out here start to fall to their worst and become stressed out, and they don't even know what they're stressed out about. Like there's hours and hours of traffic to get home just because people from so many different countries can't drive with each other. I mean, it's like, it's horrible. And I think all these people are just constantly under stress and they don't even realize why they're stressed out.
Now, tell us, you had a friend who was kidnapped, right, at a party?
Yep, in high school. One of my friends, and a lot of people in high school didn't even know about it because their family kind of hushed it up a little bit. But she went to a party in Oakland and ended up getting kidnapped, drugged, raped, kept naked, and taken from motel to motel until she escaped out of like a bathroom window and ran to a gas station, and the cops never caught them. See, the thing is out here, the cops never really catch about like half of anything, or a lot of stuff goes not reported.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then you had a sister's friend who got killed. Is that correct?
Yep. One of the girls that my sister grew up with, it was her little brother, and she used to go over to like their house a lot. And that was on the east side. And it's really sad. He was right outside of his house and he's 19 years old and they haven't caught the guy. It was a Mexican guy, and they said that it was like because he was wearing a blue shirt or something ridiculous, but he's like a blonde boy and clearly not in a gang.
So, yeah. Do you want to move? Is that an option for you, or do you feel like, no, California is my home?
Oh, I hate California. I've like been trying to get away from here, and I ended up back here so many times. It's like if your home base is here, it's kind of hard to get away. Like right now, I'm going to school again, and I wanted to move back home for a short period of time to like finish fast. But once I'm done with this, I'm leaving and I'm not coming back. I might even try to move before. I moved a few times, but I don't really know most of the country, and it's kind of hard to get out into like completely new places on your own.
Yeah, it is difficult, but I think in the situation that you're in and what's surrounding you, you're going to have to do something like that and start over, you know?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I've already done it a few times. I get rid of my stuff and just leave. Mm-hmm. That doesn't end up being like the best necessarily long-term plan, but it gives me like little breaks of sanity. Like I left for a few months after I quit my job and decided to go to school to Whidbey Island up in Washington. And that was just beautiful.
Yeah, I love it up there.
Yeah, so it gave me like a good amount of time to kind of get back on my feet to come back down here.
So I wanted to also ask you, I know you have some Ashkenazi ancestry. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so my mom's side, is mostly Ashkenazi and from... They've been here for a very long time, since it, like my great grandpa fought in World War II, mm-hmm. On for the Americans, of course, and like everyone does that was out here. Mm-hmm. And so basically, they're super like Americanized, pretty right wing, actually, like my grandpa and grandma. However, my mom grew up in California, and in her generation, pretty much everyone is liberal, so she's pretty much as liberal as everybody else. However, so I didn't really understand that a lot of people do not think Ashkenazis are European until I got online. And the last years, people have been telling me lots of different things about it, and I just kind of let it slide over my shoulder because it's really insignificant. Like, I've seen my DNA and compared it with other people's, and I don't think that people really understand anthropology or genetics in general, and that mainstream anthropology and genetics are kind of like a confounded mess. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I have some friends that are pretty into it and pretty smart. Like one of my best friends is finishing his PhD in psychology right now, but he's really into evolutionary psychology and has been teaching me a lot of stuff the last years and using my DNA to compare to different things. And I've gotten my like mom tested and had her DNA compared to different stuff. Which is
so how much percentage are you of Ashkenazi?
So basically in GEDmatch, when you look at like the Ashkenazi variation from the rest of European population, they only look at a certain select amount of markers. So I have 15% distinct, more Levantine DNA, like pretty much. And it's pretty comparable to somebody of North Italian ancestry, a mixture. So,
yeah, the thing is, it's kind of interesting because there's different Jews I've spoken with, Ashkenazi. Some say, of course, I'm European. Look at me, I'm European. But then others will say, no, I'm actually, I'm Jewish. You know, I'm a different race. So what do you think about that? Do you think the Jews are, would you classify them as a different race, or they just think they're a separate group that's separate from Europeans?
I think it's pretty similar to Latin America. So there's like a huge oversimplification of it. And it depends on where the person is from. Like, I don't even think Russian Jews are the same as German Jews, mm-hmm. or ones from England, or Sephardic Jews in the southern parts of Europe have been there for way longer. And I don't think anyone fully understands even the different migrations of Jews yet. And that's one thing that my friend is actually researching. He's wanting to release a lot of information in the next year or so because he's finishing his PhD. But, like, I think it depends on the Jew. Personally, just like the Spanish people, there's going to be people with way more like native admixture. There's going to be people with way more European, or mostly European, or completely. So I don't know. I've seen a lot of different phenotypes, and they completely range, but they all tend to be Euripid, classification Euripid.
Now, I was reading that you wrote too that you said you kind of had an identity crisis due to people telling you you weren't white. So what happened there?
Yeah, it just kind of, I mean, the trolling, I like the trolling for an extent that it's like, it desensitizes you. And then a lot of people like citing different Israeli DNA tests. I'm like, well, they have like a, you know, an incentive to kind of make it look a certain way or interpret stuff certain ways. Interpretations of like statistics and stuff can be very misleading. I guess I just try to like figure it out myself. When I first got online, I was kind of confused on the whole matter myself. And I think a lot of Jews do try to overplay the fact that they're not white because everyone, well, first of all, persecution complex they all have. And second of all, everyone's guilty. Like, they all want to not be white. So it seems like Spanish people do the same thing. They really don't want to be. Few of them wake up. I've known quite a few part Ashkenazis that start trying to wake up, and then they start reacting to different stuff they see online, and they don't start going as right-wing as they could. So I just ignore it and don't really care to that extent.
Pretty much any, all the Jews that I know in America, they're all left wing, but then when you get to Israel, of course, they're nationalists, right?
Yep. Well, not all of them, actually. Israel has its growing, their politics are so confusing. I've tried to figure it out a few times. They have so many parties.
Do they have a lot of infighting going on there too?
Oh, tons of it. It's crazy. They have their insane leftists that, I mean, they're right there constantly, like, having issues with Muslims, constantly having wars, and they have leftists that want to let them in. That's how insane leftism is. I mean, that's pretty weird. And then Europe, I was looking a while back at different voting trends, and it seems like places like France, everyone votes pretty left in the past. But theirs doesn't seem to be that much of a difference from on par with the average population. In America, they're super left-wing on average, and they tend to live in urban areas.
Oh, of course. Yeah, it was to the SPLC guys. They're they live in like a white gated community, of course. It's like,
yeah,
come on.
Completely displaced from it. And it's like so stupid because their gates aren't going to last forever.
Nope.
It's pretty dumb. It's like everywhere I go, I'm considered white, and I'm going to go through anything or be attacked by anyone the same way any white person would.
That's right. So did you get some Holocaust programming growing up? How was that for you?
Yeah, I think everyone does. I mean, even in school, you get tons of it. So it was confusing.
I just wonder since you have a little Jewish roots there, if there was kind of a different spin on it, I figure there would be.
Oh, yeah. Well, when I first saw it, all the different stuff, I mean, in middle school, they start showing that to kids in general, and they push it probably a lot more even within Jewish communities, though I grew up pretty displaced from those. I cried for like a few weeks when I first saw all the stuff. It's super confusing because like my dad's mostly German, and I don't know, like as a kid, you can't really understand the world or process it, so I didn't really get it at all. Until I got older. And I think that a lot of things were compounded on purpose. Leading up to World War II, it's completely taken out of context. No one can question this. And it's been compounding ever since into like this reactiveness back and forth. And I think that's a good point of having somewhere like Israel. It's just too bad that it was set up, I think, kind of like in a way to be a double standard on purpose, was set up after World War II for that reason. But if things would have went better, having a separate state would have been a good thing, because then people can have their separation.
Yeah, they need separation.
Totally for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
People, you know, blame Hitler and whatnot, but what was he to do? He was acting, he was in a pinch there. So he was looking for somewhere to relocate people, right? He didn't actually want to kill them. I mean, he set up the state of Israel for them.
Yep. And it's pretty sad that like that even got compounded, like with the Treaty of Versailles to that point. And people don't take anything in context. So I think that on purpose, it's been defined as this like, genocidal, racist, huge, like oversimplification pretty much. And now everything is defined by that. Any type of self-preservation is now demonized for that. And it's put into a lot of different laws in the EU, by the UN. And I think that it just kind of takes on a life of its own, especially since everybody wants to be a victim. And I think that tons of Jews completely have bit onto that whole narrative and added into it. Saying, I think that a lot of them are probably definitely internationalists and don't really care for Israel whatsoever. In the scheme of things, I think that emotional morality takes on a life of its own.
Yeah, you know, thinking of the war on whites, you're up to speed on all these topics, you know what's going on. But thinking of like your average Jew who's not a secular Jew or not an elitist, who's just more religious and minding his own business. How do you think those Jews view what's going on, this attack on white people?
Oh, I've known a few of them online that, especially from the South, they tend to be way more right-wing. I think that they're, like, completely voiceless, since Hollywood pretty much speaks out for everyone with their insanity.
Yeah.
And I think they're afraid. I think that a lot of Jews in general, that's what's underlying, like, the persecution complex, is that they are just afraid and they have, like, this horrible, I mean, they truly believe the whole narrative. They don't look at it in context, just like most people don't look at bigger pictures. And I think that they just see the reactiveness, and they don't get it.
Yeah, what was it? I think it was Defamation, the film I watched. I was looking at how a lot of kids in Israel, they're basically programmed, almost like mind control. It's almost abusive to like fear Nazis around every corner. There's a Nazi threat. It's like they program it into them since they're little kids. I mean, think of what that's doing too.
Yeah, it's horrible. And it prevents pretty much any type of, well, nationalist alliance, too, which is pretty sad, and I think being utilized on purpose.
Because I would think that there'd be a lot of religious Jews that would want the separation. They already do that. They already segregate into their own community. So I don't think that they would have an issue with nationalism or separation, right?
Yeah, well, I don't even know. It's so confusing, like, not just their politics, but the different types of Jews. They don't all necessarily get along. And I don't think there's, like, a religious bloc that just gets along with each other either. Like, there's the super ultra-Orthodox who are completely insane. And, yeah. Like, even in Israel, they don't like them. They power hose them, and they do all this
really?
Stuff. Oh, yeah, like, a few years ago, they were trying to get them to fight, because, like, everyone has to be in their, like, in the IDF. It's mm-hmm. kind of like a law. And then the religious ones were the ones that were like causing a lot of the issues with different Muslim groups and then not wanting to ever serve in the IDF. So they power hosed them.
Jeez.
I thought was pretty funny. But like, and then there's a bunch of like super ultra Orthodox that will hate Israel and the diaspora. And then there's like secular ones that hate Israel. And then there's secular ones that are leftist and support. It's like a jumbled mess. Some of them support, some of them don't. So I don't think there's any unified kind of thought process on that. But it would make sense for them to want to do that. But I don't think most people are kind of looking at what would make sense. They just kind of go with like reactiveness and emotion. So I know that a lot of the ones in the United States that are conservative movement or that are like more modern Orthodox are a lot more conservative, like socially conservative, and a ton of them could definitely be racist. I don't understand why they.
It's just unfortunate, though, that they support Israel above America, of course, right? Pushing AIPAC, it's all about Jewish interests all day long, but then we can't have any interests.
Yeah, there's just way too many, I mean, foreign interests in general, and AIPAC, I think that they're trying to compete with everything else that's going on, and that we should simplify our politics in general, and send ones that want Israel. Like, or want to support Israel to Israel.
Now, let's talk about your political journey, because I know you were involved with a couple anti-Islam groups, so tell us about that.
Yeah, okay, so when I first got online, I was just kind of trying to figure things out. So I'd look at a lot of different progressive pages, and I just saw all the logical, fallacies pretty much. I mean, it didn't make any sense. A lot of the ways that they would defend different groups. And then I started looking into Islam a bit, and right away I heard about the no-go zones in Europe, and I started to debate in different groups and on different pages. And it didn't take time, like that much time, for me to start making different friends with people who ran bigger pages or websites. And I started to admin for a few people's pages, and then I also started up a page myself with a few friends. Some that were from Australia, England, and the United States. And that one kind of took off for a while. It was a lot more right wing, a lot less politically correct in some ways. And I think it really gave me like an understanding of Muslims, like in general, because I had to report on so much stuff, and I don't really remember every single detail of all the things I reported on, but a lot of patterns I just started to pick up with how they interact pretty much with any other group they come into contact with. And I started to see the parallels between the no-go zones of Europe and just primitives in general, so Negroes and different, like super mestizo, like kind of high admixtures, seem to be just as volatile. And yeah, and so it started to really open up. I mean, I shifted pretty fast. As soon as I went anti-Islam, it didn't take that long for me to start making the parallels between primitive groups in general.
Do you think Islam is a threat to Europe?
I think they're just pretty much a threat to anybody they come into contact with. They don't really get along with pretty much anyone. Burmese Buddhists, Hindus. I mean, Pakistan broke off pretty fast, and they genocided Hindus right away. They don't really get along with pretty much any minority group that lives within their countries. And I think that they're expansionist in general, but I don't think on their own that they are necessarily a threat to anybody. But the fact that they've been expanded and favored and brought in, it makes them a threat.
Plus, we're supporting them. We're giving lots of welfare and aid. It's
Oh,
helping the
extreme.
expansion there.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, to me, it's really weird that they're the top of, like, they basically are the top in a victim group. There's no victim group that beats them. I mean, they can enslave Negroes in the Sudan, and nobody cares.
Yeah, I know.
They can take indentured servants in Ethiopia, and nobody cares. And that, to me, points out that that's purposeful. I actually interviewed a Burmese Buddhist in Myanmar, and when the Buddhists were being completely demonized by the mainstream media, and they basically said that journalists would come in there on purpose and find people with the narrative that they wanted, and that they would just start attacking their monks and attacking their women, and the Burmese would riot against them. And that's actually a very healthy reaction. So that was demonized. And to me, it seems a little suspicious that they're the biggest victim group, pretty much in the world, or seen as the biggest victim group.
And I think, is it a shock too with what happened in Paris at the theater? I mean, is it really a shock? We're letting in all these people and the way that they behave and the values that they hold and the hatred that they have for us. Were you shocked at all when you saw that?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, pretty much anywhere that you bring them, by the percentage of population that they make up, they're going to start attacking people. I mean, like, if they're below 1%, I've actually read a book on it once a while ago that was talking about the percentages of how they interact. And I think that the book was even wrong. I'm pretty sure Sweden has only around 5%, and they already riot every time that there's any type of election that they don't like. The
Oh,
election
yeah.
doesn't go their way, they start rioting.
I've seen it. They riot when the food's not good enough.
I actually, one of the people that I used to run one of our pages with was vice president of the Swedish Defense League. And he would tell me every time they started rioting for different stuff. And that reminded me a lot of like things like the Baltimore riots, Black Lives Matter. But it seems like even when blacks interact with them, they're still considered, like, Muslims are take the bigger victim place, which is pretty weird to me. So I hear all these different conspiracies online about how, it's like a false flag and all this
Sure.
weird stuff, but it really doesn't need to be. I mean, you don't need to micromanage that. You just need to put them somewhere in mass amounts, and they're going to start attacking people.
What goes through your head when people say, okay, the event that happened in Paris, for instance, well, it's our fault. You know, they blame all white people for meddling in the Middle East. So we deserve it, right? Our innocent people deserve to be bombed because of this. What goes through your head? Because I know you've heard people saying the same thing.
Oh, it just drives me crazy because it's like so many different layers of insanity that have to go into that. Like, first off, people will start to blame imperialism, and that makes absolutely no sense because imperialism has been demonized to basically take us out of all the different strongholds we had in Africa and different parts of the Middle East. We fund them. I mean, we funded them through two suite of oil deals. We've funded them through tons of different aid and Africa as well, mm-hmm. which they're expanding in Africa. So that makes a lot of sense. It doesn't make any sense to me how people could even look at it that way because I've changed so much, but I do, it's this wanting to take care of everything, which is pretty much a unique trait to Europeans, wanting to be fair to everybody else, wanting to take care of them. It doesn't really seem to work when programmed into anybody else. And it just drives me nuts because I see them as like a huge threat in general, just to have expanded so much to unnatural population percentages. And I don't think people even understand how volatile they are. So all these people think that if they're going to be nice to them, they're just going to like immigrate or assimilate in when they immigrate. And that's not their purpose. They don't do well unless they're in control of everything. So any population they live in, they will continually attack until they take control. They've been doing this they did it first with the Zoroastrians. They continue to do it with Copts long before any modern times and continuing into that. There's not one group where they could just live in peace. I mean, Hindus, they took over and made Pakistan. They're there to colonize pretty much. I mean, even if they don't know that's what they're doing. They just naturally kind of do it.
Oh, I think some of them do. You hear some of their leaders talking. It's like, oh, they're not hiding anything, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely on the leaders' points. But I'm talking about people that have been born there and they've already immigrated a while ago because there's different levels of immigration. And someone will make one friend and then think that they have one Islamic friend and that's how they're all going to.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
They're not. They're naturally, like, they hate everything about Western civilization. Not just, like, what we consider degeneracy or anything like that. They just, I mean, everything pretty much to them. They think that music and dogs and pictures are haram.
Yeah. I mean, since the beginning of their religion, they've hated us. So it's been there for a long time. You're not going to wipe that out anytime soon.
Yeah. And they're pretty much, they definitely want to dominate. I mean, that's part of their religion. It's expansionist. It's dominating. When they go into an area, they pretty much castrate the men and work them to death. And then they put the women into different types of sex slavery or servitude.
So, yeah, and that's just it too. How did they not get called out for slavery? I mean, the Barbary pirates, you know, Northern Africans who were enslaving white people during the same time as the transatlantic slave trade, which we never hear about. They did horrible things. I mean, they didn't let them have children. They just like cut off guys' balls, you know, so they couldn't have kids and just killed slaves at the end. But we never hear about, hey, how about reparations for that, do we? People should listen to my show with Dr. Bill Warner, where he tells about the history of Islam in Europe, where Islam fought in 548 battles against the classical world of Europe. I mean, this is an old feud. It's serious. I guess we're just supposed to forget about that and just focus on the transatlantic slave trade forever.
Yeah, they're still taking slaves. I mean, people literally have to ignore the fact that they're still taking slaves, like right now. Saudi Arabia, who's clearly like favored among all the different Islamic groups, is taking indentured servants and torturing them from Ethiopia and doing all types of crazy stuff. So, I mean, in the past, they've enslaved pretty much everyone they come into contact with when they conquer or save them, I guess, as some people would like to say. No. And so they definitely don't coincide ever. It's not ever been in their track record to coincide with any group unless they're an extremely small percentage.
Well, and that's why white people in Europe are just, they're so naive too, because after this Paris event, I actually heard people saying, well, the problem is because we need more multiculturalism. We need more oneness. Then we'll all get along. Then it will all be okay. I mean, it's just incredible, the mind control in these people.
Yeah, it's pretty weird and it's pretty scary. And I don't think people Well, it has to do a lot with not being able to accept the differences between races or groups in general. Muslims are the most volatile and destructive. I think they're even worse than Negroes, personally. Negroes are predictable, and they're not as successful at taking over anybody.
Maybe not as religious either, ideologically not as driven the same way.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, Muslims truly believe what they do, and they blow themselves up for it even, and that takes a high level of faith in their insane religion. So, yeah, definitely.
Now, is it true, I don't know if you've looked into this because I know you're interested in eugenics and dysgenics, but is there a lot of inbreeding going on?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, all over the place. They pretty much breed with whatever they can get their hands on. In general.
Goats will do.
Yeah, exactly. Goats are not even safe. They're conquering them too. But yeah, I mean, there's so many different horror stories I remember hearing about, like, of different women that have apostated and got away, being like, yeah, a lot of close. And it's just such a huge group also to pinpoint every single different thing, but yeah, very common, especially in the Arabian Peninsula, Pakistan, North Africa.
Now, from your research, what race would you put Arabs into? Some say Caucasian, some say no, we're not Caucasian, and of course they get called white, so where would you classify them?
I'm not going to take the credit for that research because my friend will be releasing a lot of stuff that he's been studying on it, but from what I've been learning through him, it ranges. It depends on the area, but it seems that almost every group that they've taken over, they have a lot of the maternal mtDNA of those different groups, mm-hmm. because they tend to take the women and procreate with them. So a lot of Negro admixture. I'm pretty sure certain parts even had, and I don't know how they got this, but some Aborigines must have traveled across, and it's a small, small percent. And I think that was somewhere near Georgia that he was talking about with that one. And then, so they have a whole range. I would consider them just, it depends on where. Like, for example, in Iran, they're going to have high percentages of Persian admixture, but still have quite a bit of Arab admixture in there since they conquered them, except for probably Zoroastrian sects. They seem to stay the most separate. And they're not Muslim. So they would have more of the higher, like, Persian percentages. But I would consider them, I don't know, I consider them their own thing. Arabs are their own kind of race. They're not pure Levantine at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're definitely a mix of different people.
Yeah, especially primitive people, because they seem to be able to conquer them the best. Like, North Africa's not indigenous. They're not indigenous there whatsoever, but they've taken huge chunks of it. Or at least more into the Morocco area.
So I wanted to ask you, what do you think of the Richard Kuhnhof-Kalergi plan? Remember, he was of mixed race and one of the main guys behind the early concepts of the EU. And in his book, Practical Idealism, he indicated that the residents of the future of Europe will not be the people of the old continent, but a kind of subhuman product of miscegenation. He said that the peoples of Europe should interbreed with Asians and Blacks, thus creating a multinational flock with no quality and easily controlled by the ruling elite. The man of the future will be of mixed race. The races and classes of today will gradually disappear due to the elimination of space, time, and prejudice. The Eurasian Negroid will be the race of the future. I mean, it's absolutely genocidal, but will they even pull this off? What are your thoughts on this?
Definitely makes sense. I mean, with the way that things are headed, the only way to really control, I think, any type of international government or super type of dictatorship with Europids is through something like that. I mean, Europids don't tend to do well under dictators.
No.
It's not like a really easy thing to do. So I think that it would take a lot of different admixture and a whole long string of compounding, confusing things to get to that point. But definitely would want to keep high levels. Anybody doing something like that would want to keep high levels of European admixture because so far Europeans uphold the whole world. I mean, economically, without Europeans, nothing's really going to function. So that plan actually makes more sense than completely genocide. That is a form of genocide. But yeah. Completely taking Europeans out because Europeans are the backbone of what upholds the world.
Now, I know you wrote an article about this too, but you were talking about how Netanyahu is basically trying to counter the mainstream narrative to reach out to nationalists. So what's going on? What's he doing?
All right, well, I think it's kind of confusing to see, but the UN is pretty much the origin of hate speech laws and of not having Holocaust denial. And one thing that, I think it spiraled out of control from there, but they've basically have set up all Holocaust revisionism or anything like that, or any type of countering like the narrative, to be equated to Nazism or to genocide, which is actually the opposite of what is happening. We have been naturally expanding everybody. No one has been being genocided. So it makes it unquestionable in places like Europe, and people react off of that. And I think that he can see that. There's certain Jewish leaders that have to be able to see what's happening on the bigger scale. Any type of huge war in the Middle East, Israel's not going to, they're meant to actually be taken out, I think, eventually. The double standard served a good purpose, but he can't even challenge that narrative. I mean, that's how brainwashed, first of all, the persecution complex kind of is. He can't shift it away. And they're being demonized now as the new Nazis, which is, I think, where it was intended to go. Once a lot of immigration started up, the double standard serves a purpose of, and the hate speech laws of getting people mad, rightfully so. And a lot of leftist Jews get people mad. And it kind of pits that against each other when, at the same time, every single country surrounding them hates them with almost no defensible land. And I think you can see where that is going, especially since the UN's been setting them up pretty close to the way that Germany was set up before World War II, with different demonization and kind of cataloging different things internationally, like they did with the League of Nations to show in history why they were destroyed, pretty much, to paint the next narrative. And I think that he tried to reach out in that way, and he couldn't even do it. I don't think anyone could shift that narrative right now.
He's got a lot of power, though, doesn't he? Because, wow, I mean, he's getting America to, you know, war with Iran over some nukes when Israel's never checked for nukes, right?
Yeah, well, the weird thing is that, Israel isn't checked. I don't even know if they have anything on the books of having nukes or not. The thing with Iran, and it's really kind of sad, is that internationalists in general have been like favoring the Salafists, the Sunnis especially, and I don't really understand that whole thing. Like I've said before, the Sunnis seem to be the most favored of groups. I don't think that they have any diplomatic ties with Israel per se, but Iran and Israel definitely have something going on to where I think that Iran is redirected towards Israel instead of at the Saudis on purpose. And it's kind of a way of, Israel feeds into it. They definitely are scared. I think that they're put in a very precarious position. They had the 1980s after a war with, I don't remember how many different groups out there because they've had so many. They had to give back a huge amount of land. They took the whole entire Sinai Peninsula, and they're basically kept indefensible. Their land is not defensible. Almost all within rocket ranges. So I think Israel would have liked to go to war with a bunch of different countries out there, and that they are for a long time, like they have. I mean, when Israel was first created, they went to war with everyone, including Saudi Arabia, they're kind of kept in this state of not being able to defend themselves so that they can be pitted against and constantly in this state of fear in the Middle East. And then, of course, start using us to lobby and do different things. And it compounds in a way, but I think if we would have not kept pushing Israel into peace pacts long ago and pushed them into smaller and smaller amounts of land when they took by war different amounts of land, that they wouldn't be needing to rely on us in any way. We kind of pushed them into these peace pacts when they're under attack. For example, the last one was Clinton, who supposedly supported Israel, but pushed them into a peace pact when they're getting attacked in the same way that Baltimore riots kind of were attacking. And then you're giving them concessions like the Black Lives Matter stuff. So I think it's really complex, but I think that Iran and Israel definitely do hate each other now, and they always have. I mean, Israel's always kind of not gotten along with any of the surrounding Islamic states. However, I think that Iran and Syria are definitely targeted. I remember when we first started sending out, what are those called? Mercenaries that we call rebels. They're not. They're mostly Saudis. And that was long before, I think that was like, what, 2013 when I first started hearing about that?
Mm-hmm.
And I always opposed it. And they're definitely targeted. I mean, I'm not going to, but I think they're definitely targeted by the banks and internationalists. I just don't necessarily think that Israel is at the top of that tier system. And they think that they are. So then it compounds their dynamics more, which is used to demonize Iran and Syria more, especially Iran, for the internationalists. And it all ends up going back to help more internationalist agendas that are pushed through the UN and World Bank and IMF, and not necessarily agendas that go to help Israel, per se.
So do you support the state of Israel? I know as nationalists that, you know, people are defer on this because we also have the Zionist takeover of America, which I know, you know, I mean, banking, entertainment, Federal Reserve, media, you name it, it's controlled by Zionists at this point. So why aren't they just going to Israel? What what is it that they want?
First of all, the word Zionist is a confusing word because it's overused by different internationalist groups. I think say that they are Zionists and say that they support Zionism, but their actions speak exactly opposite of what their words are, with Zionism just being Israeli nationalism. And that's like a whole confounded mess. And it would take a long time to kind of backtrack a lot of different stuff. And I don't think necessarily, so basically I support, I would have supported Israel to nuke the Kaaba about 20-30 years ago. That would be my ideal in what they would have done. I just feel like they're not necessarily the top of this whole entire thing, and that they are the scapegoat.
Do you think that there's a Jewish intervention in the top?
Oh, I definitely think that there are Jewish internationalists. I just don't think that they necessarily care for Israel at all.
Mm-hmm, sure. Yeah.
And that the average Israeli is pitted against the average European, just because, like, for example, things like the UNR, I think it's the UNRWA, there's like a whole UN branch that's just committed to expanding Palestinians, pretty much. And they're like now the highest welfare recipients in ever, like, recorded world history. They have been per capita the highest welfare recipients. And I think that they don't really get what Jews of the diaspora are like. They don't get that everyone's leftist out here, like their average person out there. So it's just kind of like this focusing everyone against each other that is going to get destroyed. So I don't necessarily support them as much as I think that looking at bigger pictures a little bit more critically and a little bit more in depth and objectively might help to actually understand where things are headed. And
I wouldn't have a problem with Israel if they just, you know, minded their own business and were nationalists and just cared about their people and didn't intervene everywhere else in the world. I mean, they're building up a wall around Israel while telling, you know, the very same people there telling Europe they must become multicultural, like Barbara Spector. And there's so many Jews now that are coming out and saying, you know, you must be multicultural, but Israel needs to be, you know, remain ethnically Jewish. So, I mean, that's my problem with it. What do you think when you hear some of these statements being made?
I completely agree. I mean, there's a lot of leftists like Spector. I wrote about her in one of my articles called Jews Have Forgotten But Not Forgiven.
Mm-hmm.
And she's insane.
Just look at her black beady eyes. Yeah.
Yeah, she's completely nuts. And I'm not denying that they have tons of leftists. I think they're just compounded by like this insane persecution complex. And that there's, I mean, a lot of them care more to see, they do. They fear or hate Europeans. A lot of them definitely do. I just think that they have a completely distorted worldview. She's not even Israeli from origin. She's American.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. American Jews tend to be completely leftist and little nuts. That goes back to the whole point that Israel also is a democracy. Everywhere is getting these democracies where the politicians too are competing. Like Netanyahu doesn't have as much power as people think that he has, even within his own country. He has tons of opposition. They're pretty cutthroat with their politics. So it's not like even if he wanted to make different nationalist alliances, he could even do that. Same with our countries. We've all become democracies in this different fashion where even if politicians weren't political whores, most of them couldn't do as much because if they start going full out nationalists, they're going to get reacted against, or they're not going to even make it to that point they'll lose their elections, different stuff like that. I think a lot of people wonder why everything's so politically correct, and it's because of, well, we have votes. If we didn't have a voting system, it wouldn't happen that way. So yeah, it's pretty, I think it's just compounded, and I wouldn't mind them either if they weren't intermixed with a bunch of different stuff. And I don't necessarily think it's the individual Israelis themselves as much as it is just compounding issues in the diaspora and a lot of other people involved too.
Just wonder, what do they want? Is this really a hatred for the Goy? Is it a religious thing? Do they want to be in control on the top? Are we in the way? What do you think?
I don't think that they have as much control as most people see them have, like, especially Israel. If we're talking just about Israel, mm-hmm. I don't think Israel has the power to give us nationalism. They could barely keep theirs. Theirs is already getting completely demonized by the same UN, World Bank stuff that's been destabilizing the Middle East and doesn't like Iran and Syria. So I don't think, I mean, if everything goes down crazy and there's a huge war, they're not going to end up on top. They're going to end up not existing. Like, I think people kind of don't understand how small their country actually is. It's not defensible strategically from a military standpoint. It's a horrible thing for them to expand. Like, why would they be expanding Muslims all around them that they hate if they were in control of everything?
Well, some people say it's like a game of chess. So the plan would be to bring in foreigners into Europe who will war with Europeans, possibly kill a bunch of them, genocide their culture. Then Europeans will eventually rise up and fight back, kill a bunch of Arabs. So Arabs get taken out and so do a bunch of Europeans. You know, so two enemies taken out, or a lot of them anyway, because as we know, Jewish groups are the loudest and most aggressive pushing for open borders. But then, of course, they would have Israel to go run to, and they have lots of groups protecting them.
I could see where that would come from, or where people would think that. I just don't, I mean, I love playing chess, and I'm pretty into, like, military strategy, chess, everything like that. And if they're playing chess that way, that would be a horrible strategy. I mean, surrounding themselves like they are and expanding their worst enemies, if you're going to do that, you would pick a different group to expand and use, not necessarily Muslims, your arch nemesis forever. And put yourself in a non-defensible position. If there's any type of huge war that would destroy Europeans, it would be destroying Israel too. And I actually think that that's how they're going to get, or how globalists are going to end up getting us into a World War III, is there going to be some type of attack back and forth in the Middle East, and Israel's going to go down. I've been doing a lot of different research, and it's kind of hard to see, but it just doesn't make sense.
Why they would be behind pushing mass immigration, you mean?
Not necessarily just that, but why they would use Muslims to do it.
They are in Europe. I mean, it's a lot of Jewish groups. They're like the number one supporters pushing and very vocal about mass immigration into Europe. But I mean, I think that also stems from just hatred for Europeans. So they want to see them destroyed, you know, then they can go hide in Israel. It's revenge, basically, for what they think we did to them.
Well, I think it has to do with the persecution complex, why they're so vocal. And they're not the ones creating those laws, the hate speech laws or the narrative of the Holocaust itself. I think that they are on some level scared and in the wrong direction, and that they're given the most kind of vocal narrative for pushing that. At the same time, there's a lot of different Jews and Israelis who oppose immigration to Europe. A lot of the people that have run huge anti-Islam pages that have, for a long time, before I was even a nationalist, opposed immigration to Europe, are Israelis. And they truthfully, like, they do oppose it. And there's also leftist Israelis that want Muslims to come into their own country. So it's like I think leftism truly is a disease, and so is a guilt complex and a persecution complex. I think they're like the flip side. Because a lot of people, when they wake up, I think, from their guilt complex of thinking that they're just these horrible people that have destroyed all these other people, which isn't true. Europeans uphold everybody else. They are mad. They start looking for what's guilting them. And so they look right to the Holocaust narrative, the narrative that the UN put in place and that nobody else can challenge.
That didn't come around till the 70s. Because when you ask all your old grandparents, they're like, no, that's a new story. There was no such thing as this Holocaust story before the 70s.
Yeah, I actually have the exact date that they started pushing that somewhere in here. I'm so bad with pulling up dates randomly.
Me too.
That's why I actually wrote down a lot of this different stuff. Let me see here. I know some are super early where they're pushing. Yeah, it looks like it was in the 60s. Hate speech laws, Declaration of Alternative Motive.
With the gas chamber story.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah, well, a lot of the different. Basically, the narrative was reinforced, and I can link to a lot of the stuff. I'm going to put the different timeline on my blog. I'm going to put a lot of that stuff up with the exacts because it's so complicated that I can't even remember it offhand. But like, yeah, I think that stuff started getting pushed, and then so people come out of their guilt complex and start to react to that, which is natural. And then I don't think people can really mostly come out of their persecution complex. It's very rare, and when they start to do it, they see the people reacting to them. So all the part Ashkenazis or different Ashkenazis I've known that start trying to go nationalists, and this is more on like on an individual level, if they start to see the bigger pictures, they start reacting against people reacting against their guilt complex. So it's almost like set up in a way that they can't necessarily start to see it, because as soon as they start to go nationalist, they just see people blaming them. It goes back and forth, and they rightfully are blaming because they've been shamed with the Holocaust. So it becomes this very confusing mess. And
Well,
I think
isn't that
that's
why it's good to have this truth come out? I like to tell Jews too. I mean, it should be good news that there was no intentional, gas chamber to kill millions of Jews. That should be a good thing, right?
Yeah, it actually should, yes. And understanding the whole entire context of it would definitely help too.
Exactly, hearing both sides, because we never hear Germany's side or what was going on there that led up to the war, right?
No, and also they have the hate speech laws in Europe that the UN streamlined to the EU. If you look at the bigger pictures and not necessarily what the people reacting off of everything is, like, so Jews are, a lot of them are completely driven insane, I think, by their persecution complex. And they're not even able to look logically at bigger pictures. And they care more about being victims than Israel's survival necessarily.
Well,
And then
and they're got lots of money too after this Holocaust story, billions.
yeah, that would probably be more like the elite people. I don't necessarily think all these crazy people like Spector or other people speaking up against stuff are billionaires. They're just nuts. Like all the different little groups popping up, and then people like Soros, of course. Soros is, I think he's just one of the internationalists who's not
It's
necessarily.
leverage. It's leverage and kind of a moral superiority that they get out of it.
Yeah, and that is very also it's appealing to the psyche, I think. Everyone wants to be a part of a victim group. Nowadays, it's kind of like morality has been equated to being a victim or being dysfunctional, pretty much, which is what victims are, or at least the narrative of being a victim, and that kind of compounds in on itself. It makes it hard for people to ever come up and look at bigger pictures, so they could play into it very easily and be subversive and destructive in different ways, and it's a type of insanity off of this reinforced, constantly reinforced persecution complex that doesn't necessarily help them at all. So that's why if they're playing chess, they're like throwing all the chess pieces all over the board. It's not like a very organized chess game, at least for the ends of Israel surviving. And that's one of the things I've been trying to like focus back on is different UN declarations are the ones that set this stuff into place, and that streamline things straight to the EU. And just because people start to snowball off of that and compound off of that and react and grow insane, doesn't necessarily mean that they are in on the actual plot itself. If there are people playing chess, they're not going to be emotionally reactive, crazy people.
Oh,
So.
sure. Well, sure. She's just one example. But then there has been, other leaders, Jewish leaders that have been open and basically saying the same thing. So you could say, yeah, she's a crazy person, but then there's someone here and someone here and someone there that aren't crazy people that are actually leaders that are respected, also saying essentially the same thing. That's what's alarming about it.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, it's taken on a life of its own. The whole narrative. They believe it. They truly believe the whole narrative. It's not like they're like. I don't think that many people have tried to challenge it within the Jewish community itself. I don't even think that they think of doing that. I just don't think that they're necessary. Like, I'm not denying that they're A lot of them are completely subversive, or and that's natural. When you're a separate group and you see yourself definitely as a separate group, you're going to be naturally subversive. And if you see yourself as being persecuted by another group, you're going to be insane with your interaction with them, and it's going to change your worldview and just the way that you perceive reality. But I don't necessarily think that that in itself means that they are going to come out on top in some type of international scheme.
Well, I know this is a huge question, but who do you think is behind this scheme if we look at different groups then that is behind this wave of basically pushing white genocide?
I think that it would tie back somewhere between the UN and different world banks, and there's going to definitely be Jews in there. It doesn't necessarily mean that they are working in tandem with the rest of them. I think that any internationalist people don't care about their people no matter what. Just like
race trader capitalists, basically the same thing.
Like some type of race. Yeah, exactly. Race trader internationalists. It's almost like more, I see it as like trying to have domination. For example, Merkel, she just sold her people out. She's Polish, I think. It's pretty close. She's the PM of Germany.
Sure, Merkel.
She doesn't care about Europe. I think that people, the more they see power and the more that they truly are true believers of like some type of international government, she's trying to go for the UN, different UN positions is what she's pretty much trying to do. I don't think that people at certain levels care at all for their people whatsoever. I think the most reactive ones, for example, Israelis will react off stuff because they're left of the diaspora. Because they think that people are just being anti-Semitic without knowing that the diaspora is insane, or some of them even within Israel are nuts. But that doesn't mean that any Jews that are top-level internationalists care either way. And I think that people see them as this omnipotent kind of...
almost like a supernatural overlord.
Yes, almost supernatural. Yeah. They're not. Yeah. A lot of them are completely able to be manipulated, but like they have different distorted worldviews. They're not necessarily like, they're not all together in tandem plotting this. If anybody's pulling different strings on higher level, in higher positions of different things, they're going to be very cold, and they're not going to necessarily care about their own.
Yeah, and we have plenty of white, non-Jewish, anti-whites. I mean, we wouldn't be in this mess without all those people and all those idiots supporting and always voting for these idiot leftists in Europe. So I get that.
Yeah. So I think that the persecution complex is actually stronger than the guilt one, even. Because the guilt, I mean, a lot of white people that hate themselves, they feel guilty for other people that they shouldn't feel guilty for at all. I think it's even harder to take the leap if you feel like everyone's trying to, like, get rid of you. Like a lot of Jews can't even discern between why the right doesn't like them and why the left doesn't like them. Like they don't even get the difference. And then they help the left that doesn't like them. And then it's insane. Cause this whole anti-Zionist actually narrative started, I think, with the left, not necessarily the right. The right sees the double standard, but a lot of leftists think that they're like the horrible apartheid, evil Nazis.
Oh yeah, sure, you know, sure. Like, they do. I get that. And it's interesting though, because they never criticize Jewish behavior, but they just criticize the state of Israel just because it's nationalist. So yeah, I get that.
Yeah. So that's insane. So that's why it doesn't make sense. If I'm playing a chess, like, that's just like throwing all your pieces all over the place. Like, why are they all pushing everything to the left? And, and everything's ending up pinning right back to Israel. That's like the worst chess player in the world. I mean, to me, if every single side's hating you and seeing you in plain sight, then you're not really good at being manipulative. Like, I don't know. Like, if somebody's in that much control and that omnipotent of a power, they're not going to put themselves as taking the credit for all these wonderful things like multiculturalism. And I wouldn't take the credit. I would prop up some idiots and let them take the credit.
Yeah, it is quite amazing, though, how organized these elite Jews are. I mean, I'm not sure if you've read Kevin McDonald's work, but it is something how they're dominating so many fields and top positions, pushing their ethnic interests. It really is some evolutionary strategy tactic.
Yeah, well, I agree with one of his things that that he talks about. Well, there's 2 points. That they have an average higher IQ. I think it's 117 for Ashkenazi, not Jews as a whole, but just Ashkenazi. And then that they have high levels of in-group orientation. And I don't necessarily think high levels of, and that's what people are seeing. I mean, they're, anywhere you look, you're going to see Jews in something that is scientific, intellectual, academic, because they're competitive. I mean, that's their natural drive. They're going to want to compete. They're going to want to succeed. They're going to want to be like the top of their different things. That's it's kind of normal. I mean, if you look in every single different area of intellectual stuff, there's also whites in all those different areas. The difference is that they have this in-group orientation that I think can be a good thing, and it can be a horrible thing if it creates a bunch of different weird compounding hypocrisy, like hypocritical aspects, and basically I think that it can be used against them. Like a small group of people, for example, internationalists, that don't care for their actual people can capitalize off of people that care too much for their own people, just as much as people who care too much for their own people can capitalize off of those who are altruistic.
I think that the smart Jews, they know that they know that there can be hundreds of Jewish groups and they can push for their interests all the time and it's not racist, but then they have to judge whites as soon as they organize and as soon as they, you know, are worrying about their interests. I think it's because it's almost like this business competition too. They want to stay on top. They know that the minute that we do organize, then we'll start getting into those positions and claiming some of those areas back. What do you think?
Yeah, I think competition's natural in general, and they are very competitive. I don't necessarily think if they're thinking about it on like white people are going to take this exact spot for their individual jobs. The highest functioning one, well, for example, Netanyahu has an IQ of I think 180 tested in real life, like IQ, and I don't think he's necessarily competing for anything other than trying to make sure that Israel survives. I know that his brother got killed in battle with Muslims, and I think he would probably like pretty much anything, wouldn't like anything better than to nuke the Kaaba and go to war with the Saudis that are the favored group of Muslims. But and I think it ranges. I think that a lot of them can be totally competitive and not want others to take their spots.
Well, like the media, I mean, they have a conglomerate. I worked in LA, you know, entertainment. It's like, it's their domain. They don't let you in if you're not Jewish. That's the first question I always got when I was working there. Are you Jewish? You know, it's like, are you in the tribe? And if you're Jewish or partially Jewish, then you can be in, you know. And there's different conglomerates like that that have been built up in America, and they don't let you in if you're not part of the tribe. And a lot of these areas was non-Jews that built them up. But then when we weren't looking, they were taken over, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I don't know every single individual different group or every different type of business that's been taken over. But I do know Hollywood itself has had a lot of different influences, I think, on it, too. During World War II, they had a complete propaganda takeover by the government with the OWI, and I don't necessarily know if that's ever been lifted. After the war, it was shifted over to the CIA, and it's kind of interesting, right before the whole McCarthyism stuff that was going on. But I do know that they completely dominate that industry, and they take credit for all the insane and stupid stuff that they've been pumping out ever since the OWI takeover. And I don't know how much of that necessarily is their direction or other direction that snowballed out from the OWI, but I do know that they sure like to take credit for it and completely dominate Hollywood. They're completely leftist. They're probably, they're pretty insane. I don't think that they necessarily care about Israeli nationalism whatsoever. Even if they support Israel in some weird offhand way, I don't think that they're necessarily like in any type of like full support. They lead this type of propaganda that leads to leftism, that leads to anti-apartheid, nationalism, same stuff that will end up turning on Israel, calling it Nazism. So they definitely are dominating different industries, and they definitely do let their people in, but I don't necessarily think that they have a good direction that they're going in that's going to necessarily be like something that they picked and they're heading towards that.
The other thing that's interesting is like a lot of these leftists, they say, you know, Jews in Hollywood, for instance, they say they don't support Israel, they don't care about nationalism, but they always marry Jews and then they have Jewish kids. So they, deep down inside, they do care about these things.
Yeah, I mean, definitely in-group orientation pushes people to stay with their group, but tons of them mix out. I think that the level of mixing out in the United States is something that that is not documented, and that also keeps Ashkenazi percentages arbitrarily low. A lot of people in Hollywood are half. A lot of famous actresses. I remember one time I was looking back at their different backgrounds, and a lot of them, was it Gwyneth Paltrow?
Yeah, she has some Jewish.
Yeah, exactly. So there's tons of them that actually do end up mixing out too, which is pretty interesting because that can go either way. They could end up going completely identifying one way or the other depending on where they grow up. Like, for example, my line, I don't identify as Jewish whatsoever.
Now, is your mom full Jewish?
Yeah, she's from a full Jewish background, but genetically, 30%.
Now, I wanted to talk about eugenics. This is an area you and I agree in, and Jews practice this. You know, they know, even though there's been a lot of outbreeding, I guess you can say, they still try and marry Jews at least, right? They're keeping that there. So what do you think about eugenics for European people?
I think that just in general, Europeans need different levels of incentivized eugenics to promote their best, reproducing the most. I think for a long time, the strain of upholding civilization, and this has been cataloged by Lothrop Stoddard in Revolt Against Civilization and Grant in The Passing of the Great Race, is that the best Europeans tend to want to achieve success or tend to want to uphold things in different ways that they don't end up having a sustainable replacement rate at the top levels for over 100 years. I'm pretty sure offhand he pulled women that finished college back when it actually meant something, about 100 years ago. And they didn't even, white women back then that finished college, so the most brilliant of white women, weren't even having a replacement rate of one. I think it was 0.8 in his book. And so I think that that's something that's definitely been affecting Europeans for a long time. It's not just at this current point.
Exactly. It's interesting, too, that there's a correlation between the more money you have and the smarter you are, the less kids these women are having.
Yeah, it's sad. And I think that's been compounding I think we've been going through a state of dysgenics for over 100 years, upholding through aid, through UN direct aid and different loans that weren't ever made to be repaid. The strain of that has created a lot harder. It's harder to achieve certain levels of success. And I think that for a long time, a lot of Europeans, the best of Europeans for over at least a century now, have not been reproducing at a sustainable rate, even before Europeans as a whole have not been having a sustainable replacement rate. So even before the more recent times, that's going to affect how well the different leaders of different European groups, like ethnic types, are able to lead their people. If the average is starting to slip downwards because they're the ones having the most kids, then there's less natural aristocracy that's able to actually lead and understand bigger pictures. I don't think if you presented all the information on how compounded everything is, that even the average person would even get it. In general.
And a lot of people are like, oh my God, you're talking about government enforcing. And well, so tell us about this. How would the government be involved? What kind of incentives? How does it work on the bottom end of things?
Oh yeah. Well, I think that Europeans in general, there's one thing that they don't do good with force. And that's one of the problems with even implementing a world government, is that you have to somehow confuse everybody and wash down things to make them even able to be controlled. I would do an incentive-based program. So the best Europeans, instead of trying to force them to have kids with each other, there should be incentives, the opposite of what we do right now. So right now we've been incentivizing for a long time people to have kids that are on welfare or different types of aid that can't uphold themselves even. And the best people have been focusing on trying to go to school and achieve in different levels of success. So incentivizing it, trying to have a sliding tier system. Let's say the average IQ for different couples could qualify them for things like nannies, house, depending on how brilliant they are, because the more brilliant people are, the more likely that they're going to have favorable recombinations for high intelligence. And that's really easy to do. A lot of people, I think, try to focus on stuff like genetic modification or, let me see, I don't know the exact terminology for it, but.
Yeah, that's creepy, I think, when they want to try and mess with embryos and create embryos and do it the lab route. I think we need to be just finding better partners and planning that way.
Exactly. It's really stupid because, first of all, there's going to be tons of unknown unknowns that pop up and horrible things are going to happen when they start. The more complex the organism, the harder it is to genetically modify in any known way. So there's going to be tons of trial and error that's going to go horribly. And it's not even as effective as just incentivizing people to have kids that are high functioning and already together. All that you have to do for proper eugenics and for it to be very fast is to just shift which parts of your population are having the highest reproduction. So we always incentivize. We've been incentivizing for a long time to take care of people the more kids they have, instead of incentivizing the most brilliant couples that meet different qualifications to have way more kids and make their life a little easier while doing so. Within a few generations would have a huge outcome. And on the bottom end, if people are so dysfunctional, it's like, let's say they're a little bit, they have a bad recombination, it happens, and they are not able to take care of themselves or contribute in any like meaningful way in a system that's a little bit less complex than ours, because our system is so straining that it makes it really hard for people to be fully functional and support a family. So, I'm not talking about like a current system where it's hard to even sustain a big family. I'm talking about like in a more natural system. There's people that can't contribute in any meaningful way, then they should probably only have one kid if they're going to continue to have like complete welfare and be completely taken care of.
Yeah, you have to cut them off at a certain point and say, no, I mean, that's how it should be with all these people coming in. Say, we're not going to pay for all your children on welfare, so do not even think about having kids.
Yeah, that's how it should be internationally. I mean, for the longest time, we have been purposefully, or not we, but in international organizations like the UN have been purposefully expanding all these people that are now coming in, and they should have been sterilizing them. All they're doing is just creating more and more dead weight in need of others to uphold. A lot of people aren't meant for civilization. For example, Africa, they've never made or sustained a civilization in all of known history, like sub-Saharan Africans.
And there, you know, I've traveled through there and I've met, you know, women in Africa and I've had this conversation there. They don't even really respect the family unit. The guys just kind of, they impregnate a lot and they just kind of run around. It's more wild, you know?
Well, yeah, because they're meant for a state of natural selection. Like they're meant for the wild pretty much. They're what allowed high trust society and people to create civilizations was high investment parenting and pair bonds. And they're just pretty much incapable of it. And which is why our eugenics would work really, really well. We already have I don't know the exact timelines. My friend would know this a lot better, but I mean, our genes have been shaped over a long, long time period. And we just need to recombine them in the right ways by having favorable couples, having more kids. Africans, there's nothing you can do to actually make them civilizable. I mean, other than high levels of admixture, which is going to create atavistic revolt and them hating white people for not being part of them. That's the other hard part, actually, is the few high-functioning ones that are propped up and everyone, you know, like is all into these different high-functioning Negroes. They're not the average, and they also use their admixture to champion the primitives.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
It's not necessarily a good thing. But yeah, there's nothing you could do to make Africans not primitive. There's no amount of eugenics that's going to change that. It took tons of environmental factors over thousands and thousands and thousands of years, probably way longer than that. My friend that's doing his research, which it's going to be amazing in the next few years, he believes that we've actually been a million years divergent with sub-Saharans, and that different subspecies can still interbreed.
Now, do you buy the out of Africa theory?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Not even a little bit. It's like laughable. It's pretty bad. It's like all the different areas of our understanding have been completely, they're just PC. Everything's
And well, it's like you just have to tell blacks, you know, the ones that are in South Africa, well, what's the problem? If whites are from Africa too, why can't they live here also? Why
yeah,
can't
they
we also have
created
the resources?
exactly. They created literally the only civilization. They have the stupid thing is that blacks tend to have in slavery with under whites and in apartheid or segregation, they have way higher living conditions, living standards. They the chances of them even making it to an age where they can procreate are way higher, which is not necessarily a good thing. And that's what happened to South Africa
Part
too.
of apartheid too is that by the time the whites got there was, you know, lots of blacks started coming down. They were attracted to what was going on. There was no one in that area when they came and set everything up. But there was a lot of tribes that were fighting. So actually apartheid was good because it actually split people up and gave them different territories and different areas where they can thrive. And so it actually created more peace. They were trying to be the peacekeepers in that time as well.
Yeah, it's sad because I don't think that they could predict what would have come of that, but it's just being overly actually compassionate that has compounded all of this. Because if you look 100 years ago, the world population percentages were way different. I mean, that's before purposeful expansion of primitives. But even before that, if you look another 100 years before that, I'm sure that there was even less before, a few hundred years before that. If you look before colonialism, I'm sure there wasn't that many at all. They probably killed each other off super fast before they even replaced.
I love how you
Yeah, and
say
it's
primitives. Nice,
I like
nice
to
word choice.
classify,
It
yeah, sorry. I like to
works.
classify like groups as primitives because that's what they are. I mean, my coming into this from the anti-Islam movement kind of made me see a lot of parallels between different primitive groups that pretty much are just like destructive or don't contribute anything to humanity whatsoever. Yeah, basically, like South Africa is a perfect example. They came in and built a civilization, and then it attracted blacks, especially for their labor. And I look at the labor as being similar to us using machines in factories. Blacks like to champion that they built all these things or did all these things or made it possible, but they didn't make it possible pretty much any more than a machine would make a factory possible
Sure,
or factory work.
yeah.
But it's sad because South Africa is another one that was completely destroyed, demonized, and they were trying to separate the Bantu tribes from their own, and they were not allowed to by world governing organizations. Yeah, it's pretty sad because that's what drew all the Bantus there in the first place was a civilization that they could leech off of or work in. Yeah, most people don't realize that Africans had like mud huts. They never invented the wheel. They never invented ships, and they didn't even have a written language in many parts. None with abstract thinking.
That's why it's so funny when people say, oh, multiculturalism, it's natural. None of this is organic. I mean, really, if Africa didn't even invent ships and machines, they wouldn't even be in Europe if we didn't bring them over.
Yeah, it's pretty. Yeah, it's very unnatural, and it's kind of sad. It's very sad because the trait that allowed for it to even happen is just compassion or being too fair or forget like caring about other races, pretty much in the first place. Like most groups, when they go through, for example, Muslims, when they go through and take over an area, they kill off the native population or at least the male line,
Yeah,
which.
they're brutal.
Yeah, exactly. Nature is usually brutal, and this is like a pretty unnatural time period ever, and especially after like the Industrial Revolution kind of compounded, I think, all of that in ways that were unforeseeable. But for example, before the Industrial Revolution, people could they couldn't see like natural selection happening.
Yeah.
And now you could take a picture, you could take a video, you could assign any type of guilt-tripping narrative to it, and everyone loses their mind. And that's just part of that's always been a part of nature. People are going to suffer, they're going to die, there's going to be people that can't uphold themselves because they don't have the genetic recombinations to do so. And it's actually very cruel to keep expanding them because then there's just going to be more of them that are. I mean, I think the kindest that you could be to somebody that's completely dysfunctional is to tie their tubes.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's the humane thing to do. I mean, we do this with cats and dogs. We can't just have tons of cats and dogs running around that are starving and we all have to take care of them. I know.
Exactly. And I don't even think most people are aware of like how they actually all like. So, for example, different people in my family, I have mentioned things like when I was trying to red pill them at different points in the past. I've mentioned stuff like, oh, well, in Africa, rape is really common. They didn't even know anything.
Oh, yeah.
They completely thought that like African, that, like one of the responses I got was, oh, Africans don't all believe in rape. I'm like, yes, they do. It's so normal. They'll talk about it in an interview as if like what the situations are of them raping. So like a lot of this also is just, people don't, no race realism, no understanding.
They're trying to apply their idea of values on this foreign culture that they know nothing about. They're just so naive about it.
Yes, that's another trait distinct to like Europeans is projection. It seems like it's easier to get Europeans to project than any other group. Asians go into an area and they'll just pretty much take it over too. Like China is taking lots of different, or trying to start stepping in different parts of Africa, and I have a feeling that they're not going to be as kind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. So I wanted to ask you, what are your thoughts on feminism?
I think it's, well, another modern insanity and like,
yes,
completely unnatural. I think it's also distorted, like to look at it now, it's distorted everything for most people. It's completely egalitarian and placing all women above all men. Or just on the same level, even. I don't think in an at least European civilization that high-functioning women really ever had a problem with expressing or with gaining some type of recognition. And I don't think that women necessarily recombined genetically. They cluster a lot more. So a lot of women, even the high-functioning ones, have this ideal in their head that they're going to be like this famous person or go down in history. And women tend to cluster, so even very high-functioning women aren't Galileo. They're not going to be a Socrates. It's just very unlikely. So I think that hope in a lot of the higher-functioning women's head kind of pushed for that, or that it's more drawing to them. And they start to equate all versions of success with masculine, masculine definitions of success. I think that women actually almost have a type of shame around wanting to be like a stay-at-home wife or a stay-at-home mother.
Oh, nowadays, yeah, they've totally created that stigma. Like, it's less than if you're a stay-at-home mom. Yeah.
Yeah, even when I was younger, because, like, I've had really high test scores and stuff, and I didn't necessarily want to go into physics and compete and do different stuff like that. And now I'm finally going back to school, but, like, because I have to have, like, a job that's, like, good enough to move around. I think that people demonize it. It's like this social and personal stigma around it. And it's sad because that's even more dysgenic because these women aren't staying home, having a lot of kids and trying to teach them, raise them themselves, which is a lot better than letting somebody else raise your kids.
Of course. Yeah, I have to say, the other week I heard when we were up in New York that on the Upper East Side, there's a trend now of rich conservative women who are basically having lots of children now because it's becoming like a status symbol again. So one can hope.
Yeah, that would be wonderful, like propaganda, like counter propaganda mm-hmm. to promote. That's important to do. Is
like,
try
look,
to make-
look at, I'm more fertile than you are. Like, if have it that kind of competition with white girls, then they'll be all about it, you know?
That would be totally awesome. I can afford this too. It's kind of like,
exactly. That's what it is. I have the money to put 8 kids through private school. Look at me, right?
That would be awesome. But I don't like it. I don't like that the reactions to it either. It seems like people are so distorted, or have such a distorted understanding of high functioning interaction of the sexes that they think that the only opposite to feminism is going to be like some very primitive version of all women under all men.
Exactly.
Like, I've been called a feminist all the time. I'm not a feminist, but I've been called a feminist online with people when I'm like arguing with them because I'm not like deferring to them. I'm like, well, you're my lesser, first of all, like some of them are like retarded. I'm like arguing with somebody online. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm not going to be like subservient to you if you're retarded. and then also, I think that women should more try to find a man that can actually lead them, that is not like that they can look up to and defer.
Yeah, you need
more.
A guy who's smarter than you. I think that,
exactly.
I mean, that's what I went for and that's what I got, you know?
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I'm glad that you did. Yeah, and see, that's what the concept that's missing there, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. It just reinforces hierarchy, and that's what high-functioning, like, or high-trust societies have been built off of. Is it builds up from the family unit all the way to the community and the society, but it's not like the woman is somehow in a bad, or like, it's horrible, she's subservient in, like, this horrible dynamic by being second in command and then having your kids kind of, I mean, that builds the hierarchy of the whole family. It's not like being... The first mate's a bad thing to the captain. Like, it's still a position of authority, and it's a functional kind of give and take. It's not like they're just like some slave and master kind of dynamic.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. They portray that in all the movies all the time. We were talking about that yesterday, watching these time period pieces. I don't know if you know, but there's like a slew of feminist propaganda movies right now, like everything you turn on. And it's just completely just one-dimensional with these guys who are just rah, 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 you know, just ordering these women around like property and all these weird sexual fetishes and cheating. And they're just total monsters, you know.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's kind of interesting that they would, I haven't seen these, but it's kind of interesting they would throw the sexual fetish aspect in there, because they tend to have, like, liberal women, like very leftist women tend to have really weird fetishes they develop, I think.
It's true. It's true.
And it's because they, like, just repress their nature, I think, so much that then it warps into some type of really weird manifestation of their natural tendencies.
Well, it was like 50 Shades of Grey. It's like all these women are drawn to, like, bondage, maybe? So you do want to be held down by a man then. Okay.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's completely, but they can't make their guy a sandwich. That's just like, it's like somehow an ego blow, but you can be like tied up. Like, I couldn't even actually go watch or read that, but I've heard about it.
Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah, it sounds pretty awful. And yeah, and also our whole society kind of needs that. So, like, on the top end, I was kind of talking about how high functioning women don't necessarily see it as a important place when it is, and it's something that society should look up to by them. It's a huge sacrifice, I think, if you're capable of becoming a physicist, instead you want to have 4 kids, 5 kids, 6 kids, and raise them really well. That's like you're contributing to your people that way.
Exactly. And you can time these things. It's you know, you can have different things at different seasons of your life. Just because you're having kids, it's not like, oh my God, that's it. You know, all anything intellectual stops. You can still do those things. You just have to juggle it and time it right.
Exactly. Yeah. If I would have started having kids when I was 19 years old, I could already had a bunch by now and been going to college again.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, I mean, I've actually been trying to focus on figuring out, I want a lot of kids, and I've been trying to figure that out myself the last years. I'm pretty picky though, because I am a eugenicist, so I want the eugenic fit.
Of course.
That's
of course.
Been kind of
now, do you like the idea of finding someone who's kind of like you, similar traits?
Definitely, yes. I want high functioning. They have to be smarter than me. I want them to have similar, also just the mindset. I don't want them to have like a victim's morality. The way that they see the world being a little bit more realistic is important to me. Competitive. Basically, I want them to be, there's a lot of different characteristics I look for when I'm looking at a guy.
Well, that's just the thing. I hear some people, God, why don't you, you know, come on, these women have to have babies. They're already in their late 20s or whatever. It doesn't always work that way. You got to find the right guy. And sometimes that doesn't happen until you're 30. But the good news is, you know, if you're healthy and you take care of yourself well, you can have babies well until, you know, you're in your early 40s. So don't sweat it.
Oh, yeah. That's what I actually think has been happening in our generation, too. Everyone freaks out about different things that might cause or like later on, like damage your eggs, but they don't realize that their eggs are parting with them. Like, I'm a straight edger, and I think that women, before they have kids, should really focus on trying to be as healthy and non-damaging of their eggs as possible.
That's right. There's things you can do, herbs, supplements, vitamins for egg health. Absolutely. So it's not like, oh my God, it's all over. I'm 35. I can't have kids. I mean, that's the kind of stuff they're programming into some women too. Either don't have them at all, or, oh my God, you're dead when you're 40, you know?
Oh yeah. The counter movement seemed to be even pushing that stuff. And it's like, well, those are averages for the regular population. That's like, you know, going to raves and stuff. That's not necessarily going to be like the average woman that's taking care of themselves or conservative. Yeah. And then, so like on the other end, that was more the high functioning women I was talking about, but even on like the regular moderate, like the moderate spectrum of the European population that can have very favorable recombinations. That happens all the time, where there'll be like an average intelligence, the guy will be, and they recombine in this way every now and then that pops out like an extreme genius. So that's a very important thing too for them to be having a lot of kids. And they end up instead being like a secretary or being a single mother on welfare. And it's really sad because a huge part of high trust civilization is also the beta males. And I know that Colin Liddell, which is someone I look up to a lot, wrote an article called Black Pill. And in there, he was talking about how basically like betas can either build up a civilization, or not just betas, but just not the most high functioning men. Cause I don't see everyone as like an alpha or a beta.
Sure.
But just like a spectrum of like, you know, the best to the those
extremes.
That build, like, yeah, exactly. So a lot of them end up being completely disenfranchised like by this and going their own way, or being more destructive parts of society because they're funding women pretty much, are like subsidizing a lot of women in our society, or that are competing with them in the workforce for like very low tier jobs. And they need more healthy marriage standards to be satisfied in our civilization. So I really liked his article on that. And that was something I never picked up on, but it makes a lot of sense. So even on the upper end, the lower end, it's dysgenic.
Yeah.
To have feminism. And then, yeah, there's not that many alternatives. People see it like as an all or nothing, which really isn't healthy.
I was talking about this yesterday. Wouldn't that be great if there was some nonprofit that was just geared towards like brilliant European kids, that fostered those kids, that put money into those kids for, you know, school, for other things, just to lift up the brightest stars? And you know how quick that would be torn down in the name of equality, right?
Yeah, it'd be amazing. Actually, I always kind of like the German school system, how they kind of can recognize what direction people are going at a young age. They tend to put people, I don't remember exactly, but I remember that they kind of take the certain people for different routes. Some are going to end up going towards college. Some are going towards different like working class jobs, or like trades skills and stuff like that. And I think that that's a really good model to go off of. They just kind of overdo the school. I think I've heard that they end up in college for like 8-9 years.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Like, so it's like Sweden. They're in school all the time. They go for years. Probably because they can't find a job now with multiculturalism. So they just go back to school. They're there for like 10 years.
Yeah, it's horrible because it ends up like just straining the whole. Well, first of all, there's a bunch of stuff that is parts of different, well, different subjects in college that are not even necessary and kind of ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
And people, some people just need to accept that they are meant for more like skilled labor and stuff like that. So college is now meaningless in a lot of ways, but or over-focused on and emphasized. And our whole entire economy has this deadweight strain of pretty much the entire world. I don't even think that people can realize how much of the world we uphold and how much that strains us, because it's just over-complex. It's made so complex that people can't even see all the ways that resources we generate are drained out of us to expand primitive populations. So if that wasn't in place, people would get, I mean, there would be a lot better jobs and a lot better of economy, because all the stuff isn't zero sum. If you have a bunch of productive people without dead weight, they're going to be making the standard of living better, making life easier. You would need, if all the stuff we put into other races went into resources for our own societies, people wouldn't even need to work that much.
Well, it's just funny because it's like, in order to have equality, all you need is a white society, right?
Yeah, exactly. Or just not, or at least just not have people in extreme poverty. I don't think there's ever going to be a full level of equality.
Of course not. But the closest thing possible would be nationalism, because even in nationalism, you take care of your, you know, not so
exactly
desirable on the bottom end. Yeah,
and over like just a few generations of eugenics, you really wouldn't have a bottom end of not so. I mean, everyone would contribute in different ways. There'd be a surplus to where it wouldn't even be needed.
Oh, can you imagine? That would just be so amazing to live in that kind of world.
Yes,
I wonder if that's ever going to happen.
It would be a lot less like frustrating to speak about different or just discuss different things. That definitely would be. Yeah, it's kind of like the opposite of the passing of the great race would be that, which would be nice to see. And that's kind of why I like to look at bigger pictures. And I think that people should actually try to take a look at a lot more complex buildup of things for the bigger picture itself and not necessarily be reactive. Because if there are other things going on below the surface that is not as easy to see, then understanding that, not for reapportioning blame or anything, but just to understand that to better counter where everything is going right now is more important than who's an insane jerk or not, or yeah. how the past happened. And even getting different groups to realize that they might have to cut off, because certain things become so compounding, I think, that these people end up being really insane. Like the person that's a super leftist is not, and they haven't woken up yet. They're probably not going to wake up. Like there's people here that in California that are completely, I mean, there's people who have been attacked or had horrible experiences with multiculturalism and they still support it. And that's got to be a level of insanity that just...
Mind control.
Yeah. Or just complete. I have no idea. I have no idea how to get through to some people, but.
Yeah. Some people I think are lost. Well, Rachel, exactly. Please share your website for everyone and let them know how they can get a hold of you.
Yeah. It's facingmyownreflection.com. And I do get messages on there or people can write comments. That's pretty much the best way that people can contact me. And I will be taking some of the different things I talked about in outline form today and putting it on there since I'm not necessarily very good with on the spot talking. This is my first time ever being on a show.
So you did great. It was great.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. And yeah, it was very nice.
I want to take a few minutes to address infighting among our own. On my show and on Red Ice, one thing we've always been known for is variety. And many times we've been caught in the crossfire of having guests on who hate the next guest we have on. Through the years, we've seen many groups of people fighting each other over the most ridiculous or esoteric things, yet they are 90% on the same page. Recently, I've seen much hoopla and infighting between pro-whites over the term alt-right. I've used the term many times myself. From all the people I've met who use the term alt-right, it encompasses many Europeans with diverse views and backgrounds. It's not that everyone who uses the term alt-right agrees with each other 100% of the time. That's ridiculous. Who does? And there isn't some written code of conduct or rule book. Sure, people get ideas of best approaches, but white people are too rebellious to conform. And that's a problem many times. There are pro-whites who choose to be outside the left-right parameters and reject the alt-right term. I personally think that at the end of the day, everything polarizes into extremes. Day and night, hot and cold, up and down, left and right, man and woman, friend and enemy. We live in a time of extremes, and there is no middle ground in this era. You get pushed to choose a side in a time of war. Even our brain is split into two hemispheres, left brain, right brain. I know that some people are more balanced as opposed to using more left or right. I know that some argue a split or fracture occurred long ago, but that it's not our ideal state. Who knows? When it comes to politics, what is left and what is right is constantly changing. I get that. Some people think National Socialists were left, whereas others think they were far right. But to me, when I say right, I mean what is natural law, the constant in nature, that which we can always count on through the ages, primordial tradition that never changes, and really the way of our ancient ancestors. But I was very disappointed recently to see pro-whites ripping into other pro-whites who identify as alt-right because of differing views on 9/11, National Socialism, thoughts on gayness, and other things. This is a complete waste of time and not smart strategically to be bickering and picking fights with others who are 90% ideologically on your page, people who want the same end result that you do. What good comes out of it? Only harm. You're not saving anyone. You're not helping the cause. It certainly does not fall in line with the noble virtues. I do think 9/11 was an inside job, but I don't reject every single person who doesn't align with me on it, nor do I think they have to align with me on 9/11 in order for us to have a white homeland. On the flip side, I'm equally disappointed to see pro-whites ripping on other pro-whites who embrace or are curious about conspiracy, metaphysical concepts, and the occult, as though that is not acceptable in order to be pro-white. Whites are multifaceted, curious people, and that's never going to change. White diversity among pro-whites should be encouraged. Beneficial things come out of it, like the flat earth theory. Do you know how many people mentioned in their commentaries their disapproval of those talking about this theory? What a time waster. Is that really the most productive thing to do when the people who are mentioning it are a tiny fraction of pro-whites? Is fighting with each other, mocking each other, turning your backs on each other a wise thing to do? Is that a thing someone who loves their people does? I do not respect or condone this behavior of tearing into other pro-whites who have the same ultimate goal, European preservation and independence. If that is the goal of a person, and if they're sincerely supporting that cause, accept them with their quirks and differences. Europeans are not conformists, and they never will be. I don't think a few gays in the alt-right or a few non-whites who support our cause is going to derail our mission. If I did, that would be weak and pitiful. I also don't think differing views on the Holocaust, Jews, or 9/11 is going to derail our mission. Is that all it takes? If so, we're doomed. Is this being cuck 2.0? Absolutely not. It's being wise enough to know we need a pan-European movement, one that embraces white diversity of pro-whites, and making exceptions for the special few. If we can't simplify our goal, boil it down to the most common denominator, European preservation and a future homeland for our children, making that our number one focus, practicing self-control to not snicker and bicker with each other, then building anything is out of the question. Because what built our white societies? White diversity. We have to be like the white army, uniting various groups to fight for our future. Because in the end, the enemy, no matter who you think that is, won't stand a chance if we back each other up. Scott Roberts will be on next week. Thanks for listening. Have a good night.